Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bova Metzia Daf Nun Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins seven lines from the top of Daf Nun Zayin. At the end of our previous shiur, we gave a brief introduction as to what we will be pursuing right now. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei/Mivneh heading. We've circled the names Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah. We see a machlokis between Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah. Alma Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan made a comment. Oino ein lahem. Bito mekach yesh lahem. The laws of Ono, which we've been discussing in the last number of Dapim. So no need to go over that again. So if you're a first-time listener, by all means, study the Gemara from the beginning of our perek. The laws of Ono do not apply. However, the laws of Bitol Mekach, whereby if there was a mischarge of more than a sixth Yeshlem, the deal could be called off. So Rabbi Yonah says that Rabbi Yochanan made his comment regarding Ahekdeshais, the sale of items sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Yirmiyah Akarkois, that the statement of Rabbi Yochanan that even though there's no din oino, but there is a din of bitul mekach, that applies to karkois. Our Gemara opens up as a, we'll say, new point of discussion. That's why we've included a slash mark. It's worth noting that this marking, this approach, is based on Rashi, who features in Dibur Masa Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah Milsa Bapi Nafshayu Amri. These are comments on their own. Velo ad Rabbi Ami Kaimi. And they're not a continuation of what appeared just before. However, one should realize that Rabbi Ami himself dealt with these topics. And Rabbi Ami said that regarding Hegdish and Karka, there is no Ono, that of course was in the Mishnah, but there is Bitol Mekach. So Rabbi Ami, just before this discussion, dealt with these points. That having been said, in light of Rashi, we start the Gemara without relating or referring to that which appeared just before. So now we go to the Gemara text, and I want to just repeat, the style of this Gemara is not that common. Here you have two Amoraim who are quoting the earlier authority of Rabbi Yochanan, and they argue as to what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yonah Omar Ahekdeshois. Rabbi Yirmiyah Omar Akarkois. Rabbi Yonah makes his comment regarding Hekdesh, animals sanctified to serve as sacrifices. Rabbi Yirmiyah makes an observation or a comment based on land, real estate, that Rabbi Mishmei to Rabbi Yochanan, and both in the name of Rabbi Yochanan say, Ono ein lahem, bitul mekach yesh lahem. That though the laws of Ono don't apply, the laws of bitul mekach, whereby if the mischarge exceeds 1/6, the deal can be called off. Man d'omar hekdeshos, that's a reference to Rabbi Yonah, that there is bitul mekach regarding the sale of sacrifices. Kol shekein akakos, all the more so in the case of land sales. So as far as Rabbi Yonah is concerned, the concept of bitul mekach applies to both hekdesh and karka. Man de'oma akarkois, Rabbi Yirmiyah, who said that the concept of Bittul Mekach applies to Karka. Aval Ahekdeshois, lo. But as far as Hekdesh concerned, no. Kiddush Shmuel. And that would be based on Shmuel's approach. The Omar Shmuel, Shmuel teaches Hekdesh Shove Mona Shechilol Al Shove Pruta Mechulol. If someone had dedicated something to the Beis HaMikdash and he wanted to redeem it, this would be not a case of a sacrifice, but rather a case of an article that was dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, and he wants to retrieve it for his own purposes, so he would have to redeem it. Shmuel tells us that if a person does a redemption that's totally off kilter as far as value is concerning, an item worth 100, a mona is 100, so we'll say $100, and he redeems it, transferring the kedusha onto $1, or even one pruta being the smallest denomination of currency, mechulal, it's an effective redemption. So you see that when it comes to value transactions with regard to hektish, the even major discrepancies do not cancel the transaction. In this case, the transaction being in the form of redemption. So, as far as Rabbi Yirmiya is concerned, the idea that there is Bittul Mekach, that's limited to land deals, but does not have any effect on Hekdesh. Tanan Hosam. It's taught in Maseches Temura. And here we have a Tanaic source that we have only a fragmented quote of it. Rashi brings in the beginning part of the source. If you look in the Rashi, you can see we have it framed in the lower part of the narrow lines. And in the source, it speaks about one who tries to transfer the sanctity of one item onto another. In the case of animals, so there's an attempt to replicate the sanctity that was imposed on one animal onto another. That's called tamura. However, if a person says zu mechulelis azu, if one tries to use a language of redemption of an animal that was dedicated as a sacrifice, so that does not get off the ground. There's a difference between replication of kedusha, of sanctity, versus transfer or redemption of sanctity. So the source in Maseches Temura says that if it was an animal that was sanctified as a sacrifice but developed a blemish, then by saying zu mechulelos azu, the transfer of sanctity from the blemished sacrifice onto the replacement animal would work. After all, a blemished animal is not fit to be brought as a sacrifice on the altar. The source tells us that if there's a discrepancy in value between the original sacrifice that now has become blemished and the replacement animal, so you have to make a financial adjustment. And you can see this in the Rashi. At the end of the framed source, the end of the narrow lines, you'll notice three lines before they get wide. V'tzorach la'asoyis lo'idomim, im ein zu shel chulin yofeke shel hekdesh, moisif olav mo'isov ad kedei demei hekdesh. If the blemished sacrifice has a particular value and the replacement animal is worth less, then what you would do is you'd have to transfer the sanctity of the animal onto a sufficient amount of money that reflects the value of the sanctified animal, and with that you would buy a new sacrifice. So now we go back to the Gemara. Tanan Hosam, Im Hoya Kiddush Baal Mum, if the sanctified animal developed a blemish, then by your saying zu mechulelos azu yotzei lechulin, the sanctified animal would depart from the realm of sanctity to become chulin, the tzorach la'aseis lo yidomim, and you have to make a financial adjustment in order to purchase a replacement animal that's worth the value of the previously holy animal. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan yotze lechulin devar Torah, and Rabbi Yochanan comments on this that the redemption, transfer of sanctity from the blemished animal onto the second animal, the chulin animal, takes place. It's effective on a Torah level. In other words, even though there's a discrepancy in value, the transfer of sanctity works. V'tzorach la'asos lo yidomim midivrayam. The source indicated that you have to make a financial adjustment. You have to add money to the replacement animal in order to get an animal that's finally worth the value of the original sanctified animal. That's a rabbinic requirement. Reish Lakish Omar Af Tzorach La'asos Lo Yidomim Min HaTorah. And Reish Lakish says that the requirement to adjust the value so that the replacement sacrifice is of the same value as the original animal that now became blemished is a Torah level requirement. B'mai Askinon. What are the circumstances here? You'll notice we have some markings, and on the side of the Gemara, let's note what the purpose of these markings are. The house marking features a machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, behadikatoni v'tzorach la'asos lo yidomim, b'mi shechilu behemas kodshim balmum al behemas chulin, regarding someone that transferred the sanctity of a blemished sacrifice onto a common animal. V'tzorach shiakpid shachulin yeshove erech shel hakodshim. And the halacha here is telling us that you have to make sure that the chulin animal has the same value as the original sanctified animal. This need for making the financial adjustment, the Rabbi Yochanan midrabbanan, it's a rabbinic expectation. Reish Lakish min haTorah. Reish Lakish says it's a Torah level expectation. The triangles that appear in the Gemara are shlavei birur. There are stages of clarification. Ladas im medubar bichtei oina o bitol mekach. We want to know whether the difference that you have to make up for is within the realm of oina, that's up till a sixth discrepancy, or it's a case of a discrepancy of even more than a sixth. So now we go into the Gemara, the first triangle. E lema b'chdei oina. If the machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish concerning the need for making an accurate transfer is where the animal, the chulin animal, is b'chdei oina, is worth less, a sixth less than the original sanctified animal. Well, Baha Lema Reish Lakish Tzorech La'asos Lo Yidomim Devar Torah, under circumstances like that, would Reish Lakish's comment have been relevant that you can't do the transfer when the discrepancy is a sixth even on a Torah level? Vatnan, but the Mishnah says Eilu Dvarim She'en Lahem Oino. The following are items that the laws or the restrictions of Oino do not apply. Hakarkois, Vavodim, Vashtoros, Vahagdeshos. And we focus on what we dashed underline, Hegdeshos, sanctified items. So in the realm of sanctified items, a discrepancy that's to the tune of 1/6, the Oino rate, would not be a restriction. So Reish Lakish's comment of Tzorach La'asos Lo Yidomim Min HaTorah would not be relevant. Ela Bitol Mekach. Rather, the attempted redemption from the sanctified blemished animal onto another chulin animal is where the discrepancy is more than a sixth. So B'ha'leimah, Rabbi Yochanan, Tzorach Lasis Loidomim Midivrehem. Would Rabbi Yochanan have said that in a case like that, you'd have to make an adjustment or a seek out a replacement that's of equal value on a rabbinic level? V'omar Rabbi Yoina, Ahegdei Shois. And just for a moment, we skip the bracketed section. Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoina said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan regarding Hekdesh, Amri Oino Ein Lohem Bittel Mekach Yesh Lohem. That even though Oino doesn't apply, Bittel Mekach does apply. So that if you're going to tell us that the din of Rabbi Yochanan in the Machlokis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, that the din of Rabbi Yochanan if there's bittul mekach, there's a need for adjustment on a rabbinic level. But Rabbi Yona had quoted Rabbi Yochanan saying that Hekdish does have a need for avoiding bittul mekach. And this comment of Bittul Mekach Yeshlahem, Tosfos points out, is not on a rabbinic level. That's on a Torah level. And therefore, we would have a contradiction in Rabbi Yochanan's. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan originally said, Tzorach Lasos Loidomim Midivrehem, you have to make sure that there's, let's say, equal value on a rabbinic level. And if you're saying that that's because the discrepancy between the original sanctified animal and the animal you want to redeem it onto is worth less by more than 1/6, Rabbi Yochanan, though, says that according to Rabbi Yona, that there is a problem of Bittul Mekach on a fundamental Torah level, not just a rabbinic a problem. Now we skip the bracketed line. That's because our discussion is focusing on Rabbi Yochanan's approach to Hekdesh, which is the topic that Rabbi Yona addressed. According to Rabbi Yirmiyah, in fact, a major discrepancy in the realm of Hekdesh would have not been a problem. So that's why we bracketed off Rabbi Yirmiyah. But let's read the Gemara again, including the brackets, understanding that Rabbi Yirmiyah's position right now is not the center of our discussion. So as the Gemara said, to suggest that the circumstance in the Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is a Machlokas on a Bittul Mekach level, the discrepancy between the original sanctified animal and the redemption animal is more than 1/6, then how could Rabbi Yochanan say that the need to rectify or to adjust the value is only rabbinic when Rabbi Yona says that in the realm of Hekdesh, a discrepancy of more than 1/6, which we call Bittul Mekach, applies on a Torah level? The Gemara answers, we said we would read the bracketed section, so let's do that. After reading V'omar Rabbi Yoina Hekdeshes, Rabbi Yirmiyah Omar Akar Kois, V'travayu Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan Amri, Oino Ein Lehem, Bittul Mekach Yesh Lehem. Rabbi Yochanan holds, according to Rabbi Yoina, that in the realm of Hekdesh, there is a problem of Bittul Mekach, not just on a rabbinic level. Li'oilom Be'Bittul Mekach. The Machlokis, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, in fact, is where the discrepancy between the original sanctified animal and the replacement animal, the redemption animal, is more than 1/6. The epoch the Rabbi Yochanan, the Reish Lakish, u the Reish Lakish, the Rabbi Yochanan, and the names that appeared above in the house markings, their positions are to be switched around. In other words, that which Reish Lakish reportedly said above, Tzorach Lasis L'Domim, and Torah is now Rabbi Yochanan's point of view, and that fits in very well with what Rabbi Yonah said is Rabbi Yochanan's point of view, that when it comes to Hekdesh, there is a problem of Bittul Mekach. B'mai Komiflgi, what's the basis of the disagreement between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? B'dishmuel. They argue as to whether or not to accept Shmuel's approach that we mentioned before. D'yomar Shmuel, Hekdesh Shoveh Mona Shechilu Lo Yal Shoveh Pruta Mechulol. Shmuel says that if you redeemed some sanctified item that was worth 100 onto something worth 1 pruta, the transfer is effective. More islay de Shmuel, umor leslay de Shmuel. Reish Lakish, according to the, we'll say, the switched around version, would accept Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan would not. And therefore, you have to, as we said above, Tzorch Lasis Loidomim in HaTorah. You cannot allow for a major discrepancy in value transfer when it comes to Hekdesh. Iboy Seima de Kuli Alma Islehu de Shmuel. Another approach to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is to suggest that both hold from Shmuel that you can redeem Hekdesh that's worth 100 onto an item that's worth 1 pruta. And the point of disagreement between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish would be as follows. Mor sovar she chilolo in lechat chilolo. She chilolo is an expression we call bidyevet. Post facto, that if you did such a redemption with a great discrepancy in value between the original sanctified item and the replacement item, so okay, the redemption goes through, but as a first choice, l'chadchila, no. And as a first choice, before you've made any move, you should see to it that there's equal value in the item being redeemed and the item that's going to absorb the new sanctity. Umor sovar afilu l'chadchila. And the other opinion holds that even as a first choice, you can make a redemption with a very great discrepancy. Rashi adds information here that you don't see in the Gemara, and we could look at the Rashi together, 6 lines from the bottom. Umor sovar afilu l'chadchila, and the reason for that is Erkecha, the word Erkecha that you see in the Torah, kol dehu mashma, whatever value you transfer the original sanctified item onto is acceptable. That's kol dehu mashma. Hilkoch, lafkui sure, as far as removing the original restrictions and prohibitions on a sanctified item, vafilu midrabonon shori, to remove that Esor from the original item and transfer it onto a replacement item, even on a rabbinic level with a great discrepancy, it's okay. Umiu li'achar zman yishalem. However, after a while, you shall compensate the Beis HaMikdash for that difference. Let's turn back to the Gemara. Iboy seima li'oilam. Here you see a totally different approach. You'll notice with our markings, we've used a dashed underline to draw your attention to the Roman numeral number 1, where this marking appeared as well. Above, we concluded that the Machlokis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish is in a situation where there's a major discrepancy in value between the original sanctified item and the item you want to transfer the Kedusha onto. This approach, the Olam B'chdei Oino, that their Machlokis is where the discrepancy between the replacement item and the original item is 1/6, not more. Velo tepuch, and do not switch around the names. If you recall, according to approach Roman numeral number 1, we set up the machlokas concerning a situation of Bittul Mekach, and we have to switch around the names, making Rabbi Yochanan the more restrictive opinion. This approach says that the discrepancy is 1/6, the low tepuch, and do not switch around Rabbi Yochanan with Reish Lakish. The machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is within a concept introduced by Rav Chisda. The Omar Mayim Lehem Oino, Rav Chisda says the expression of that we saw in the Mishnah, that Hektish and other items, Ein Lehem Oino, that they have no Oino, Einon B'Toiras Oino. We continue at the top of Amud Beis, Da'afivu B'pochos Mechtei Oino Chozer. It doesn't have the makings of Oino in the sense that in the case of Hekdesh, even a minor discrepancy is grounds for reversing the deal. Even a negligible difference is grounds for reversing the deal. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said that Yotza l'chulin dvar Torah v'tzorach la'asos l'idomim midivrehem, that's a rabbinic requirement. But Rabbi Yochanan himself doesn't hold by Rav Chisda's very restrictive approach. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, would hold like Rav Chisda that Einon b'toras Einon, that even a minor deviation from the original value of the sanctified item that needs to be redeemed would require a readjustment on a Torah level. As you can see, we have a new marking, the volcano shape, and if you look in the margin under the Mivneh heading, this represents a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track in the form of a give and take questions and answers, where the narrow part of the volcano facing up represents questions and the inverted answers. Meisvei ribis v'ino lehedyot v'ein ribis v'ino lehegdish. Here you have a Tanaic source that says that the laws of Ono do not apply to Hegdish. This would seem to be a Tanaic source contrary to Rav Chisda. The Gemara responds, Mi Alimo Mi Masnisen, is this Tanaic source any more authoritative, any stronger than the Mishnah? De Ukimna, we took the expression in the Mishnah of Einlem Oino and interpreted it as Betura Soino, that they don't have the range that the laws of Ono allow for. Hachinami, so too in this Tanaic source, Ribis Vedin Oino Lehedyot, the laws of Ribis interest and the laws of Ono apply to a commoner. The Ein Ribis Vedin Oino Lehegdish. When it comes to Hegdish, the flexibility, the range that you have until you get to Ono, doesn't apply. Because even less than a 1/6 discrepancy is not acceptable with regard to Hektish. So Rav Chisda's point is preserved. Question. Ihochi. Hainu dikotoni seifa. If that's the point that this source features we'll say a great stringency with regard to Hektish dealings, then how do you make sense of the Seifa, the continuation of the source that says Zeh Choymer Behedyot Mi Behegdish? This is the area of stringency dealing with commoners over Hektish. Yeah, but according to your explanation, a hektish transaction where there's a discrepancy of even less than a sixth, you call it off. You reverse it. That's not true in the case of hedyot. So how could you describe the source as a stringency by hedyot, by commoners? The Gemara answers, that comment of the Seifa is aribis, regards the laws of interest, namely that the prohibition of ribis applies to a commoner. The laws of interest and the prohibition of interest does not apply to hektish. The Gemara says, well, listening, Nami, once you're mentioning stringencies of one realm over the other, listening, Nami, state the following. Zechoymer behegdish mi behegyot. Oh, no. That this is the stringency of hegdish over hedyot with reference to ono. That in the case of a hedyot, you have a range of discrepancy in value that we still tolerate and accept the deal up till a sixth. But according to Rav Chisto's interpretation of ono with regard to hegdish, even a minor discrepancy is grounds for calling off the deal. So why not mention that this is the stringency of hegdish over hedyot, namely, ono. The Gemara answers, Hachi hashta, how can you compare the case of the chumrah of hedyot over hegdish versus hegdish over hedyot? Bishlamo, it makes sense to say, zeh chumrah behedyot mi behegdish v'sulo, that this, referring to ribis, is a singular example of a stringency that applies to commoners over the realm of hektish, over the realm of the sanctified. And that's it. You're not going to find other examples. Ella hektish, but to describe the chumrah of hektish over hedyot and say, zeh chomer v'sulo, this is the stringency, namely, ono is the stringency that you find by hektish over hedyot. That's not the only restriction or stringency. In the realm of hegdish, there are many areas of stringency over hedyot. So it would have been inaccurate to say ze choymer behegdish mi behedyot. As we just said, that would imply that this is the only chumrah when that's not true. So as a result of this give and take, we were able to preserve Rav Chisto's approach to hegdish and oino. Namely, that with regard to hegdish, there's no din oino, and even a discrepancy in value, in transaction of hegdish, of less than a sixth would be grounds for calling off the deal, that you would not find by a hedyot. In the course of this discussion, we mentioned that the laws of ribis apply to a commoner, but do not apply to hektish. Here, the Gemara wants to know what is an illustration of ribis by hektish. Ribis de hektish hechi domi. What is meant by ribis by hegdish, concerning which we said ein ribis lehegdish, and this is exactly the topic that we're going to deal with now. Hechi domi, what are the circumstances? E lema de oisfe gizbor mea b'mea v'yesrim. If the temple treasurer took 100 units of money, $100 from the Beis HaMikdash, and loaned it to someone who would then have to pay back 120. I'll give you 100 and you'll give me back later on 120. That has the characteristics that that's a case of interest, but that wouldn't fit into the scheme of things here as describing that there's no ribis by hektish, follow mo'al hagizbar. The temple treasurer, the Gizbar, by taking money from the Beis HaMikdash treasury and loaning it to some commoner, is guilty of me'ila, of taking that which is sanctified and removing it from the realm of sanctity to the realm of the of the mundane. And that's a problem of Me'ilah. And what happens when that takes place? The Kevan Shema Gizbar, when the Gizbar does that, when he violates Me'ilah, Yatsu Ma'isav L'chulin, V'havu L'hu, Dehegyo. The money becomes common money. As soon as he loans the money to the commoner, it becomes common money, and then there is a problem of ribbis. You can't say that there's no prohibition of ribbis when you're dealing with chulin funds loaned to a commoner. So what do you mean by there's no ribbis regarding hekdesh? Amar v'shaya hocha b'may askinon. The case featured in the source where it says ein ribbis by hekdesh, it's not talking about a loan. It's a different arrangement, as you will see very shortly. Kagoin, shekibel alav l'sapek siltos me'arba v'omdu mishalosh. The Beis HaMikdash made an agreement with someone to supply them with grains, with wheat. Wheat was used for meal offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. And the agreement was that you'll supply us with the four units, well, four se'ah. Se'ah is a dry measure. Four se'ah per se'la. So the supplier would provide grains at that rate, and eventually Beis HaMikdash would pay for it. What happens if the grains go up in price, they become more expensive, that you would get only three per sela? Well, in this case, since the supplier is dealing with the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to have to supply them with the original agreed amount. Even though, when it comes to the actual supplying, they've become more expensive. Let us look at Rashi, a few lines up from here. Hocha b'mayaskinon, haidekotoni ein ribbis lehekdish. That statement that there is no ribbis in the realm of hekdish, lav mahalvoko, it's not referring to a loan. Elo behedyot shikibul mois min alishka min agizbar, a person who received, a commoner who received money from the temple treasury, L'sapek siltois kol hashana l'menachas shel tzibor. He would be the supplier of meal offerings for the entire year. And the rate was 4 sa'ah, 4 sa'in, besela. He would get funds from the Beis HaMikdash, if you will, if he got, let us say, 100 sela. He would have to provide, according to the original agreement, 400 sa'ah. The hukru, the omdu mishalosh sa'in besela, and the price of grains went up to 3 sa'ah per sela. Dilu hedyot osu lifsok al peros al shiyetze ashar. When it comes to deals between commoners, I'll pay you to supply me with, that happens, that's allowed only once the price is established. The Kan here, with regard to dealing with the Beis HaMikdash, afilu lo yotza hashara adayin la'arba, even if the rate has not become established as at 4 per sela poiskin, they can make an agreement like that. These laws, by the way, are dealt with extensively in the next perek. We're not delving into them right now. But the point that Rav Hoshaya is making is that in a case like that, where there was an agreement to supply 4 sa'ah per sela, we gave an example before. The supplier got $100 from the Beis HaMikdash, and in exchange for that, the supplier would supply 400 sa'ah. In the course of time, the grains became more expensive. The supplier must supply the original agreed amount of 400 sa'ah, even though 400 sa'ah is now worth more than 100 sela. It increased by 33%. So it saved him worth $133 instead of the $100 that he got. But nevertheless, he'll have to make do. He received $100 to supply 400 saw. He has to supply the 400 saw, even though right now they are more expensive. Kedisanya, as is illustrated in the following Tanaic source, Hamakabalov Lisapik Siltois, a person who accepted upon himself to supply the Beis Hamikdash with soles, the grains, the wheat offering, which is the soles is the flour for the korbonus, Mearba, and the agreement was at a rate of 4 saw per sela, Viomdu Mishalosh, and they became more expensive. Mesapek Mear, but he still has to supply at the original rate of 4 per sela. Mishalosh Viomdu Mearba, if the original rate was 3 saw per sela, let's say he got $100, he received $100 from Beis HaMikdash, and there were 3 saw per sela, so 3 for 100 sela, he would provide 300 soim. That was the original rate. The omdu me'arba, and they became cheaper. Mesapek me'arba, he has to supply them with 400. You notice in both cases, the Beis HaMikdash always gets the better deal. Shiyad Hegdash al yona, the power of Hegdash, the hand of Hegdash is on the upper hand. What's the point that we see here? The concept of ribis you see here, where an agreement was arranged and there was an increase in value, you have to meet that increase in value all the same. That's allowed, as we saw before in Rashi, to enter an agreement with Hegdash even before the price has been established on a public level. When it comes to dealing with a commoner, deals like that cannot be made. Deals are made only once the price is established on the public market. Rav Papa Omar, Rav Papa says that the reference above to Ein Ribis LeHegdash, in fact, is dealing with loans, and still there's no Mi'ila problem. Hacha be'avnei binyan ha'masurus legizbor askinan. We're dealing with stones that are used for the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. These stones are in the possession of the Gizbar. However, they do not have sanctity yet. And because of that, the Gizbar, if he in fact loans the stones to someone else and will get back more than what he gave, there's no Mi'ila problem. And at the same time, since we're dealing with stones that are in the realm of the Beis HaMikdash, there's also no ribis problem. Now, what do you mean by stones that are in the possession of the Beis HaMikdash and yet they're not holy? Well, this is Kiddush Shmuel. The Amar Shmuel, Boinin Bechel V'Achar Kach Magdishin. Rashi explains this. Let's learn Rashi together. D'yomar Shmuel boinin b'chol, k'shehein boinin b'nyanei hektish. When structures were set up in the context of the Beis HaMikdash, lo hayu kainin o'avonim v'atit mimois hektish. The Beis HaMikdash authority would not use holy funds for buying the raw materials, the building materials, the stones, the cement. Why would they not use holy funds? K'dei sh'lo yavo ha'umanim v'om lidei me'ila im yeshu aleihem o im yenu mehem. Imagine in the course of building, if the building materials were bought with holy funds, at the point of purchase, the holiness would leave the money and set upon the stones. And then in the course of building, a worker would sit on the stone. He's violating Me'ilah. But it's very difficult while you're building, you want to rest, it's very difficult to avoid a scenario like that. So what was the solution? Elalaykhin ba'akofa, the Beis HaMikdash would acquire on credit. V'harehen choyl ad shivnu b'choyma, and until the stones were actually built into the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, they retained a chulin status. U'meshem b'nuyas b'choyma, once they were, the stones were built into the walls, Noisin Mois Hegdish, remember Hegdish bought it originally on credit. So at that point, Beis HaMikdash would part with their money, they would pay the money, for Loichin Oisan, and at that point the purchase would take place of the stones. For Hu Hegdeshan, that is the point at which the stones become sanctified. So there's no more fear of one sitting on them after they've been built into the wall. Let us turn back to the Gemara. Ein bohen tashlumei kefel. The list of items in the Mishnah, karka, avodim, shtoros, and hekdish, we said the laws of kefel don't apply. The topic heading that is introduced on the side of the Gemara in the margin, we've written makuras, sources, laha dekotoni b'mishnah, regarding that which it says in the Mishnah, eino chayav kefel al advorim shemuzkar b'mishnah, regarding the items mentioned in the Mishnah, if there's a stealthful theft of them and the thief is finally caught, even though one who steals portables that have intrinsic value, the thief pays twice their value, they'll call that kefel. Not so in the case of these items. We're going to see a Tanaiv source that provides us with sources for these, and the double underline marking that you see shortly are mi'utim, it's what is excluded, and of course it'll be the items that we just referenced that are found in the Mishnah. The Gemara. Ein bohen tashlumei kefel mino hani mili detonu rabbanon. What is the source for saying that karkois, avodim, shtoros, and hegdish are not included in the realm of paying double? Well, there is a pasuk in Shmos Perek Chof Beis pasuk Ches. If you open a chumash, you will see that this pasuk is found in the context of items given to a shomer to watch, and in the event that they are stolen, double is paid. So it says there, al kol dvar pesha klal. That's a general statement on all matters of pesha, sin, irresponsibility. Al shor, al chamor, al se, al salmo, prat. The Gemara goes on, the pasuk that is, goes on to enumerate specific examples of the general case. So you have an opening part of the pasuk that's a klal, a general statement. Then you have prat, specific statements, or specific examples. And the pasuk goes on to say, al kol aveda sheyomar, chozar v'kolal. And at that point, the pasuk is reverting to the general format. All lost items. Klal uprat klal. This kind of scriptural setup where you have a general statement followed by specific examples, in turn followed again by a general statement, tells me i'atodon elo kein haprat. What you come away with, what you derive from this pasuk, are other things that are like the examples. What can we say about the examples? Mahaprat mefurash dovar metalta v'gufo mamon. Just like each one of the items mentioned, a shor, an ox, a chamor, a donkey, a seh, a sheep, a salma, an article of clothing. What are they? They are portables, and they have intrinsic value, gufo mamon. Af kol dovar metalta v'gufo mamon. So to anything else that has those characteristics that are portable and have intrinsic value, as opposed to representative value, will, in the event that they are stolen, generate a double payment. And that double payment, when you look in the pasuk, it goes on to say there, shnayim, it says, yishalim shnayim l'reyu, at the end of pasuk ches. What then do we conclude? Yotsu kakos. If you're telling me that only portables that have intrinsic value, in the event that they're stolen, will generate a double payment, well, that excludes land, she'enon metatlin, they're not portable. Yotsu avodim, we exclude slaves, shehukshu lekakos. In the scripture, slaves are compared to land. Yotsu shtaros, will exclude from kefel a stolen bill of collection, shafal pisha metatlin, even though it is portable, ein gufon mamon. The shtar is only something that proves or represents a value. It doesn't have intrinsic value. If a bill of collection entitles the holder to collect a debt of $100, that is not to say that the piece of paper on which the debt is written is worth $100. And hekdeshos, omar kro reyehu, regarding hekdesh, that's excluded by virtue of the fact that the word reyehu appears in the pasuk. Reyehu means your fellow man, and not the holy fund. The pasuk concluded with the expression yishalim shnayim l'reyehu v'lo tashlumei dalav hei. The Mishnah also said that those articles are excluded from the 4-5 payment. My time law, why is that the case? The answer is Tashlume Dalet Vehem Rahmana. The Torah speaks in terms of a stolen sheep or ox that, when slaughtered or sold by the thief, will generate a payment 4 or 5, depending on whether it was a sheep. He would have to pay 4 times. If it was an ox, he'd pay 5 times the value. That is what the Torah says you pay. Not 3 or 4. In other words, let's focus for a moment on a theft of an ox. The Torah says you have to pay double. And if the thief slaughters it or sells it, he pays 5 times the value. How do we calculate 5 times the value? So the 5 times the value is made up of the kefel, the double payment, plus 3 more times. We just said, though, that there's no double payment for a stolen hekdesh animal. And so if someone stole an ox that was sanctified, there isn't any kefel. What does that mean? It means that the principal would have to be paid, but not the extra time, the double. So that you're left with a principal value that's paid. And then, if he were to slaughter it, that would generate 3 more times. So you have a principal plus 3. Well, that's 4 times the value of the ox. The same analysis with regard to the sheep. Since there's no kefel, you only have 1 time for the payment of the principal, and then 3, I should say, and then 2 times because of the slaughtering. So 1 plus 2 is 3. So the Torah doesn't have payments of 3 or 4 times. The Torah has payments 4 or 5. 4 for the sheep, 5 for the ox. Not 3 for the sheep, 4 for the ox. So once we knock out the kefel, the second payment, the double payment, there cannot come to be the payment of 4 and 5. Shomer chinom eino nishba, mino hani mili. A shomer chinom is unpaid bailey. We say that if he were given one of those items, the karka or shtar or eved or hekdesh to watch, and it got, let's say it got destroyed because of his it got stolen. So if you were dealing with common items, the shomer would have to swear, I was not negligent. But in the case of these items under his trust, if they are stolen, the shomer chinam does not swear that oath. Where do we know that from? The Tanur Rabbanan, the source says, and here we're citing Pasuk Vav, which essentially was the opening Pasuk of the section that we quoted before when we made reference to Pasuk Ches. It says at the opening there, which is a section of the Torah dealing with items entrusted to a Shomer Chinam, an unpaid Bailey. And that's the point of our Mishnah right now, that a Shomer Chinam, the unpaid Bailey, does not have to swear the oath that he ordinarily would have to take if he were dealing with a commoner, or with regular, let's say, portables that have intrinsic value. So the Pasuk says, Ki teinish el re'ehu, when one entrusts to his friend, klal, that's a general statement. Doesn't specify what was entrusted. The Pasuk goes on to say, Kesef o kelim, cash or vessels. Well, that's specific. Prat. Lishmor, to watch. Chazar v'kolal. The structure is, as we saw before, klal uprat uklal iatodon elokeina prat. In order to establish a rule, we evaluate the characteristics of the specific examples. Maha prat, the case examples of cash and vessels. Mefurash, they are explicitly dovra metatlu v'gufo mamon. They're portables and they have intrinsic value. Av kol dovra metatlu v'gufo mamon. So too, the laws applying to a shomer chinam that generate his having to swear would have to be elements, items that are portable and have intrinsic value. Yotzu karkos, not so in the case of land, to the exclusion of land, she'enon metatlin, it's not something that is portable. Yotzu avodam shukshu l'karkois, slaves are compared to karka in the scriptures. Yotzu shtoros shafapish metatlin egufo mamon, we exclude documents, bills of collection, even though they're portable, they don't have intrinsic value. Hegdeshos amakro, the pasuk said, ki tein eish el rehu, rehu velo shel hegdesh. The need for swearing is when you were entrusted with the item by your friend, not where Hegdish entrusts something to you to watch. Nosei Socharenu Mishalem, the paid Bailey, ordinarily, in the case of a commoner that gave someone something to watch and paid him for his services, in the event that it's lost or stolen, the paid Bailey has to compensate. And not so in the case of the four areas, the four examples that we mentioned in the Mishnah. Mino hani mili, where do we know this exemption when it comes to the shomer socher, the paid bailey? The tonu rabbanon, ki itein ish el rehu klal. This section of the Torah, by the way, is in Shmos Perek Chof Beis Posuk Tes. And this section is dealing with a paid bailey. So it says there, when you give unto your friend something to watch, klal. That's a general statement. Doesn't specify what you gave him to watch. Chamor oso or shoros, eh? Here you have specific examples, a donkey, an ox, or a sheep to watch. Prat, those are specifics. V'chol behema lishmor, chazar v'kolal. The continuation phrase is, any of all animals to watch. That's a general statement. Klalu pratu klalu iotadena lekena prat. Ma prat mefurish dover metaltel v'gufa mamon. Av kol dover metaltel v'gufa mamon. Just like we saw above, no need to translate again. Yotzu karkois shena metaltelin. Yotzu avodim shehukshu lekarkois. Yotzu shtoros shafo pisha metaltelin en gufa mamon. Hekdeshos omar kro reyehu. The pasuk that we read before, the pasuk tes. It says, Ki tin ish el re'ehu, re'ehu v'lo shel hegdish. When a commoner gives you something to watch, not when hegdish gives you something to watch. So if hegdish gave you one of these items to watch, and you, as a paid bailey, had it stolen from under your supervision, you would not have to pay. You would not have to compensate hegdish. We said, Shomer chinam eino nishba. That was a point that we dealt with earlier. We had sources for that. However, we raise a question. You'll notice we have on the side of our going the margin and note, say, a topic heading which reads Stira Lamishnah Seinu. We encounter what appears to be a contradiction to our Mishnah. Bahadikotani Shemrchinam Eino Nishba Al Hetish. Our Mishnah indicated that the Shomer Chinam will not swear when it comes to Hekdish. He won't swear that he wasn't negligent. And now the contradiction comes Mehadikotani from that which is stated in another Tanaic source. Sheim Nignav Onevad Shikle Hekdish Meashaliach Shach Lavium Lamikdash. If the public's half shekel donation, which is a donation to the temple fund, to the Hekdish, to the Beis HaMikdash, if the monies that are sent by the population through agents, and the money was stolen from a Shaliach who was on his way to bring the Beis HaMikdash, the agent, we will see, has to swear that he was responsible and didn't act in negligence. So, what are you telling me in our Mishnah that a Shomer Chinam doesn't swear concerning articles of Hegdish entrusted to him, when you see from this source dealing with the Machzis HaShekel donation that there is an oath taken by the Shomer? In this case, the agent is the Shomer of the, he's watching, he's on the cash, the Machzis HaShekel funds are under his supervision. Take note of the marking scheme that follows. You'll notice a give and take structure represented by the house marking. The narrow part facing up represents a question, and the inverted house marking would, when you see it, represents a response. Veromino, we raise a seeming contradiction to our Mishnah from the following source, another Tanaic source. B'nei ha'ir sheshochel eshikleim v'nignevo she'avdu. The townspeople sent their machzis hashekel, their half shekel donations, annual machzis shekel donation, and they got stolen or lost. Im mishenisremo hatruma, if the theft took place after the separation of the monies took place in the Beis HaMikdash. Monies that accumulated in the Beis HaMikdash that were now Nisrama, Chuma, separated for the purchase, for the purpose of buying public sacrifices. So if the theft took place after the separation of funds took place, we continue at the top of Daf Nun Ches, Nishboyin Lagizboren. Notice the dashed underline highlighting the word Nishboyin. The agents swear to the temple treasurers that they were not negligent. Now, since the theft took place at this point in time, the townspeople do not have to replace the funds that were stolen. So, In a sense, the Beis HaMikdash loses out. So the agents have to swear to the temple treasurers that we, at least, were not irresponsible. V'imlav, if not, meaning the awareness of the theft took place before the Beis HaMikdash separated the funds for the purpose, or earmarked the funds for the purpose of buying public sacrifices. Then Nishboyin, we dashed underline that again, because this again is part of the problem, the contradiction. The agents are swearing to whom? To Livnei Oir. They swear to the townsfolk that, you know, you sent your money with us and it got stolen, not because of our irresponsibility. And the townsfolk have to replace the Machzis HaShekel donation with a new donation. Nimtzu o shechzirum haganavim. In the event that the stolen cash was found or the thieves decided to return it, Elu veelu shkolim heim, v'ein oylim lahem l'shana haba. the original donation remains a donation of the Masa Shekel, and the replacement monies that the townsfolk provided also remains sanctified, and they don't get credit toward next year's Masa Shekel requirement. What's the point? Well, I think we emphasized it already. You see here agents that are swearing, agents are swearing concerning Hektish, concerning the Masa Shekel, the half shekel coins that were sanctified for the to the Beis HaMikdash. That's our contradiction. Now, we have some markings that follow. You'll notice we have a diamond marking. They represent Gimel Yishuvim, three resolutions, L'stira b'mishnasenu, l'hadish kolem, between the, to resolve the countries between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in dealing with the shkolem. The inverted house indicates a response. So, but before we go ahead, just take a bird's eye view of the Gemara. You notice Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, and later Rabbi Elazar, they address the issue of the Shavua. So Omar Shmuel, there's no contradiction. Hacha benose sochar askinan. The Shavua referred to, where we dashed on the Shavua, the agents were paid. Now, the Shavua here is not a Shavua to be exempt from compensating. It's a Shavua. It's an oath that they take in order to collect pay, their pay. V'nishboyin litol soran. So the main point is, according to Shmuel, as far as the need for the Shomer Socher to compensate for the theft, he doesn't have to compensate. He's exempt from that requirement. Where does oath figure in? Well, they're swearing that they were not irresponsible, and that they have their wage, their wage coming to them for having been paid baileys. Question: I hachi nishboyin legizborin nivnei oir miboyale. Who's paying these agents? The townspeople are paying them. Where does the scenario of nishboyin legizborin figure? That they swearing to the temple treasurers. What do the temple treasurers have anything to do with their collecting their wages? Oh, my Rabba. Rabba says we can legitimatize that statement as follows. Nishboyin levneo yir b'maymud gizborim. The agents swear to the townsfolk that the monies were stolen and that they were not irresponsible. We deserve our wages. In the presence of the temple treasurers, ki hechi dolo nichtedinu v'inami ki hechi dolo likru luhu poishim. The swearing takes place in the presence of the temple treasurers so as to avoid being under suspicion. Rashi points out, nishboyin levneir litol shoron, to get their wages, v'maymer agizborim, b'nei she'ahefsid al ha-hekdish. Because in this case, there's a loss to hekdish. The monies were stolen, and they're not going to they don't have to compensate for the loss of the monies, and they the oath in order to collect their wages takes place in the in the presence of the temple treasurers, as Rashi says, hefsid al hektish, because hefsid hektish is going to suffer the loss. Now, it seems to me that that this would be the case when the theft took place after the monies were separated and earmarked. And that's what the expression of that's where the expression of nishboyin legizborin takes place. So here we're developing that phrase by saying that they're going to swear, these agents are going to swear to the townsfolk in the presence of the gizborin. And as we said, that's because the gizborin at the end of the day in this case are losing out. So we don't want these agents want to avoid some kind of suspicion, so they swear in the presence of the Gizborim. Another possibility is the oath is taken in the presence of the Gizborim so that these agents would not be called Poshim, reckless individuals. It gives it a sense of, say, seriousness and authority when they swear in their presence. We continue in the Gemara with a question that takes a couple of lines to develop. V'ha nignivu osha avdu katani. The source said, if you notice, we have a little star directing you back to the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Beis. It described the townsfolk sending their cash donation, Machsa Shekel, and it was Nignivu O Avdu. It was stolen or lost. That's, by the way, the little star that you see to the side of the Gemara text enables you to find where this quote came from. V'shomer Sochar B'gneva V'aveda Chiyuvei Mechayev. We know that in general, when you're dealing with commoners, a Shomer Socher, in the event that something is stolen or lost, he has to pay. Not like an unpaid Bailey that's exempt. He, the Shomer Socher, would have to pay. V'hocha, in our case, where you're dealing with holy funds, V'hocha Nami, Nehi the Shlumi Lo Mishalmi, granted that they are the Shomer Socher is exempt from compensating, but Agrayomi Olivsid, at least their wages they should lose out on. How is it that you're saying, how is it that Shmuel is saying here that the Shvua is for the Shomer Socher to collect their money? Why should they collect their wages? Granted that they don't have to compensate for the theft, which is something ordinarily would have had to do. But, okay, here we're dealing with Hegdish, so they're exempt from compensating. But what, they can expect to get paid? Omar Rabba. Rabba answers, we in fact are talking about a Shomer Socher, and they are coming to collect their wages, but the circumstances were as follows. Nignivu, the case of theft, Ballistim Izuyin, it wasn't a simple stealthful theft, it was an armed robbery. That's called Oines, that's beyond their control. A Shomer Socher, even in a mundane scenario, would be exempt. Avdu, the term avdu that was in the source, Shetovas Finosa Bayam, his boat sank at sea. Another example of Oines, where the Shomer Socher, under all circumstances, would have been exempt. So in view of that, they have a right to demand their wages. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, a second approach to resolve the contradiction, Ha'amani Rabbi Shimonhi. The source where we saw an oath having to be taken in regard to the Shkolim, which was Hegdish, this is authored by Rabbi Shimon. It's a different Tanaic authority. There's no contradiction in sources. This is a source authored by Rabbi Shimon. The Omar Kodshim Shechai Bachar Yisun Yeshlem Oino V'Nishboyen Alehen. Rabbi Shimon says that when you're dealing with kochim, that sanctified items that the owner bears responsibility to, say, to make good on it if it's lost or something happens, that makes it, even though you're dealing with something that's sanctified, but it puts it more in the realm of the mundane, because you still have an attachment to it. You're still bound to it in the sense of having to make good if anything happens. So, items like that, where the original owner still bears responsibility, the shvua is generated. The shomer would have to swear. Well, ha tenach, that's a reasonable explanation. Ad shelo nisra ma'atruma, describing the owner as still bearing responsibility and the need for the requirement of a shvua, that's if you're talking about a case of theft before the temple earmarked its funds to buy sacrifices with the monies that had been accumulated already in the Beis HaMikdash. However, Mishenisrama Truma, the case that you saw at the very bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Beis, if the theft took place after the temple earmarked the monies for the purchase of public sacrifices, at that point, if this theft takes place, the original townsfolk are exempt. They don't have to compensate. They're already covered by the funds that were separated in the Beis HaMikdash for the purchase of the sacrifices, for the public sacrifices. So, in that case of Mishenisro Ma'atrumo Kotshim She'enu Chayav Bachriyus Oninu, that becomes a case of Kotshim that the owner is not responsible for anymore. Desanya, the Brisa says, Tormin Ala Avud Ve'ala Gavoy Ve'ala Asid Likvois. The Beis HaMikdash will, Tormin, will set aside the public funds for the purchase of public sacrifices to cover monies that were lost, monies that were collected but are still en route, and monies that will be collected, so that people whose donations haven't reached the Beis HaMikdash yet, they're covered by the temple in the meantime having separated and earmarking funds for the purchase of sacrifices. So if the theft took place after Nisrama Truma, the original owners don't have to make good. They're covered already by the Beis HaMikdash earmarking of the funds. So why is there Nishboyen according to Rabbi Yochanan? The whole basis of Nishboyen is because you're dealing with Kotshim Shechayim Bachrisim, where the owner bears responsibility on making good if something happens. But if it's Mishenisrimo HaTruma, the original owner doesn't have to compensate doesn't have to replace the stolen good, those monies. Elo Omar Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Lozer continues with the line introduced by Rabbi Yochanan that we're talking about a shvua that the shomer would have to take in order to be exempt from having to pay. And of course, in contrast with the approach taken by Shmuel, that it's an oath in order for the shaliach, for the agent to collect his wages. But it's rather the shvua referred to is a shvua to be exempt from paying. Now you'll ask, but according to the Mishnah, the shomer or the shaliach doesn't have to swear because here you're dealing with hegdish. So how can the source, the second source quoted, say that you do swear to gain exemption? So Rabbi Lozer says shvua zu takonas chachamim hi. On a strictly Torah level, you would not be required to swear, but this is a rabbinic enactment. Shaloyu bnei adam mezalzel in bekdeshah. So people should not treat lightly holy items that were entrusted to them. If you would leave matters on a Torah level, the shomer could say, it's the thing was the item was stolen. I don't have to swear because it was holy funds. If that's the attitude, then people will treat hegdish lightly. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.